Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, mentor, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all of these many skills to address the subjects and conversations that we should be having but often avoid. It is 2 o'clock, and as I said, time for your appointment with the Reluctant Therapist. And where are we going today, Elizabeth?
We are diving headfirst into a musical journey.
I like where we're going.
I figured you'd like that. It's a musical journey kind of with a theme underneath it. So, you know, I have to caveat around to get there. Many strings to get to one place. One, Live Oak was phenomenal and so much fun to be with everyone. Love that community feeling and the new people that I met and artists I got to talk to backstage. And I'll be able to bring those stories and conversations to you over the course of the summer, probably in August. And also just like that spirit feeling of being together in community for a common experience has just felt so, it was so powerful. And given that, you know, it's interesting, I don't know if you feel it, but there is this shift that happens right around solstice, and maybe I'm extra sensitized to the seasons, but it's almost like I step in or shift, or the air feels different. I can't describe it, but there's some transitional movement. And I'm not going to use the word portal because I know I talked about portals for 6 months before my anniversary, but it felt yeah. like a portal.
Kind of.
There's this just this whole environmental shift. And then, of course, there's that summer explosion of heat and humidity if you're on the East Coast, where I just was for a week, which makes summer feel even more pungent and in your face. But then there also tends to be that like shift in energies all around. And there's political shifts, and there's world shifts, and there are community shifts. And for whatever reason, and I'm sure that there is a reason, that everything gets heightened and feels more intense and more aggressive and more, just more unsettled. And it's an ironic thing, isn't it? Because the summer people look forward to getting their umbrella and going to the beach or going up to the lake and going out on their boat or having the longer days and having barbecues in the backyard. You know, summer kind of brings up these feelings of, you know, hot dog cookouts and ice cream cones. I can, you know, picture all of those summery feelings. And yet, at the same time, it tends to be when things explode around us.
Right.
You know, not just from heat, but just from all of the tensions of the world. So here we are. And this is going to be, like, today is my last show in studio for the next couple months, because I'm taking my annual summer sojourn to kind of regroup and be with my husband and, you know, kind of come up with new inspirations for my life. And so as we move into this kind of shift, because I don't usually step away from the show, we're going to have a five-week special running in July of shows, 5-hour-long specials. The program's Call to Mind Mental Health Awareness Month series, and it's a bunch of interviews talking about different areas of mental health, different voices of people who've been living with mental illness, and stories from around the country about people's experience with their mental health care. So I think that'll be a really great break for everyone to take that 5-week special in July. And then I'll be back in August with some of those interviews with artists from backstage, and also kind of whatever else has been coming up for me throughout the summer. Then I'm back in the studio live in September, nearly middle to end of September, and hopefully get a lot of energy in the studio and a lot of people coming in to talk about their lives. So that's kind of where my energy flow is right now, feeling this a lot of tension and need to make some shifts. And so for today's show, I actually was approached by an artist and playwright and songwriter and health and human services worker, Devin Wallace, who said, you know, we should I should. Someone should do a show about music and protest music and music that moves movements. And here we are with all of these things kind of blowing up around us in the world and around the country. And we tend to fall back on the soundtracks that are familiar of different generations and different decades. And wouldn't it be interesting to talk about where that new kind of movement music is, and what is the music that's supporting the communities? Because what we both agreed, and kind of what I felt again at Live Oak, is that when you're with a group of people sharing a common experience, the music starts to become kind of this binding aspect of it, that you're sharing this experience together. And imagine if you're sharing this experience and you're singing together and all the voices are out loud, spreading the energy, uplifting the energy, like how much more can be accomplished? Kind of like going to church. When you're in, you know, a church with a lot of people and the chorus starts singing and then the entire congregation sings, it can feel like it elevates the room. And then it elevates this energy and people kind of leave with a different vibration. And so with all of the protests and gatherings and marches that people are participating in, and as we do, it seems often, but going into the summer, what is the music that pulls people together, and how can we take the energy that's necessary for people to not lose hope, to still feel like there's a reason to get up and go out and stand up for the things they're passionate about? Where is the music in the gathering that helps people not feel so alone? So that's kind of where we're going today. Topic-wise, my guest is here with his guitar. He's got a couple ideas of songs that might be fun to bring unity together. But I'm also going to open up the phone lines. I'm curious to know what songs inspire you or uplift you or make you feel like you can get out there and carry on and share your concerns of the things you're passionate about, because we all have them. And also, how can we bring together music and movements and not have them be separate things? Because it seems like more and more we have gatherings of concerts and we have protests or marches, but where are the coming together type of events where people can feel each other's energy and the strength that comes with gathering in numbers, but with music at the heart of it? Because I believe that the music piece is what gives it more of a grounding. You know, and again, I'm up for conversation. I'm sure my guests will have thoughts as well. But, you know, walking with people who are chanting and carrying their signs or quietly standing, that feels powerful. But it feels way more powerful when all those voices start to sing something in unison. I'm curious to know what you think. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. You're welcome to be part of the conversation. If there's some sort of music that uplifts you or some inspiring artist out there that's doing good work that I don't even know, you can also be part of the conversation after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, or you can send me a message through Facebook or Instagram, and you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or I'd appreciate if you podcast our show. Subscribe through Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever it is you find your podcasts, even on YouTube. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and that way we can share the show with other people and build our community and uplift our voices. So we're going to take a quick break and come back and start our conversation with Devin Wallace right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
For we are timeless, boundless, far we are near. We are alive beyond the poison of fear. Stronger when we are open and
Chad.
I'm Elizabeth Baird, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And welcome, Devin Wallace, to the show.
And thank you for bringing me on.
No, I'm so happy that you reached out. Now, Devin, you have I wanted to share a little bit about you before we dive into the conversation, because you come from a really rich background as a theater artist, as a playwright, a songwriter, a director, an instructor. And then you also have worked in the health and human services world as a professional. And I imagine that, you know, you found a way to blend those things throughout your career. You worked as an artist in residence in different organizations, city, county, and state arts organizations, teaching students from preschool, which must be super fun, through high school. And then along the way, you also were co-founding theaters in Oregon, Washington, California, and writing and directing your own original plays at these venues. And then you had a play that was part of NPR's Playhouse.
Several.
I love that. Several. And then developing the grants, which is an art form unto itself. Anyone who's ever written grants before, that takes a whole special skill set. We're able to, through the Endowment for the Arts, do special performances, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Armstrong Radio Foundation. I mean, that's a lot of work and a lot of recognition for your talents to get grants from those organizations. And then meanwhile, or at the same time, you're the Director of Education and Programs for the Stroke Association and National MS Society in San Luis Obispo County, bringing in expressive arts work. So I guess I would like to start with, how did you find your way into the theater arts to begin with? What drew you to it?
Sure. Well, actually, it is in line with what we're discussing today. You know, I was a 60s kid, and the songs particularly of Bob Dylan when he was addressing societal issues as a young teenager, I would like take a hot bath, throw myself over the bed, and disappear into some of those 11-minute songs that would take me out of where I lived and take me into people's life situations. And that, I think that rang a couple of bells for me. One, I knew that music is a medium I wanted to embrace. And two, I saw the power of music to, one, just wake you up to things that you had not been exposed to. Mm-hmm. And of course, our culture works hard to keep us from being exposed to a lot of things that are coming down. So that sort of lit the fire. And then as I did do some songwriting stuff at coffee houses in Oregon in, you know, my later teen years, I loved that, but I still had that yearning to be writing things that more addressed what I was seeing. Mm-hmm. And theater, writing music for theater and writing plays for theater allows you to have a much wider spectrum of things that you write about. I mean, not that musical artists don't sometimes address that, but I love the fact that you could look at this period of time and write things for that. You'd have to study it. You'd have to learn it. You'd have to try to enter that space. And you would, you know, educate yourself about how some of the social ills had evolved over time. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of kept me there. So as, you know, also seeing physical theater in the 60s, where there was a lot of experimental theater. Mm-hmm. So I entered it not as a literary artist, but as a movement artist working with masks and experimental stuff. And So there was that impetus, too, of not just wanting to be sitting in a chair like a TV show, but moving and dancing and that sort of stuff. And music is the best way to make that happen.
To integrate it all.
Yeah. So that's how I started, and it kept up. So even when I started writing and producing for NPR, in some of those projects, I wrote music and songs for that. And that sort of definitely not all of my songs, or even maybe a huge percentage of my songs, are topical, but quite a few are. And that's just kind of stayed with me.
So as you were growing up, were your parents musicians or artists, or did you just find this path out of your own?
Well, you know, it's a little sad because my father, which I didn't learn until much later, sang in a Dixieland band. He was a Charleston dance champion, and I wrote a pretty catchy, pretty catchy song about that at one point. Because when he danced, you could feel those breezes sway. and unfortunately, growing up, as I did in the Midwest, he had struggled with alcoholism during the war. My own personal take on it is that he was a clerk typist during the war and not out there on the field, and he internalized some guilt. Of course, that's just my theory. Mm-hmm. But he started drinking, and when he came home, my mother said, "I love you, Al, but it's me or the bottle." And he wisely chose her, which was a very good choice, and was dry for like 17 or 18 years. But because in those days, social life really did revolve even more, I think, than today around drinking. Mm-hmm. And friends were not supportive of sobriety. Mm-hmm. He kind of, in order to do that, I believe he just chopped off those parts of himself, right, which I think he suffered from. But it was in my genetics more than I knew. But discovering it was both delightful and a little confounding. Like, hey, man, I would have loved to have been, you know, to hear the Dixieland band or learning clarinet and playing alongside you, you know, something like that. So it was a discovery that, yes, it was somewhere in there, but pretty buried or pretty chopped off, and I had to kind of dig to get back to it.
And so did you write protest music in the 60s when you first started? Was it focused on that, or was it more focused on what you experienced as a teen and 20-something?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was just watching a documentary last night on Joni Mitchell. I can't remember. It was Lady Blue. Blue is in the title, like, you know, off of her great masterpiece album. But she was talking about, she always considered herself a barometer of the times that she was moving through. And I think I wanted that aspect, you know. It might not be something political, but it might be something that just catches the eye. So there were definitely, when issues came up and when certain wars, you know, I was an anti-war activist in high school, became a conscience objector, proud to say one of the first, I believe, non-Amish or Mennonite who actually got conscience objection status. Because I made a pretty convincing case for it, I believe, partly which was economic. I said, hey, you lock me up, that's thousands of dollars every year. If not, I'm working out there helping people. Which do you want to do? Me and some other resistors. So through that, you know, there were some songs that definitely addressed that. When I later became involved in anti-nuclear work, there was some material there. But I would say, you know, not as directly topical songs as I wrote later.
Hmm. Yeah. You almost grew more into yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Devin Wallace, singer, songwriter, author, playwright, theater arts, and health and human services, expressive arts expert. And we're talking about music and how it inspires community and how it inspires movements. And I always wonder if it's a chicken or the egg thing. Does the music inspire the movement? Do people hear the music and it awakens their souls to something? Or do they feel the passion and then they search for the music and the community that helps build that? Or maybe it's a little of both. Our number is 805-781-3875. And Julian, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. Hello. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you? I think we've spoken before.
Yes. What's on your mind today?
Well, great program. Your guest there, hello from a fellow stage and film writer. And on the music topic for how the music can pull together movements or topics and stuff, I've been doing a bit of that over 10 years or so here, in even longer, in San Luis Obispo and then up in Vallejo, California. And the topic that I was following up with is gun violence. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit of what I have to offer your audience today.
And so what inspired you to write about gun violence or address that issue?
It's a bit of a story. And I've been doing guitar shows for 10 or 12 years here in San Luis Obispo and also down in Big Bear, California, and up in San Francisco. and I do a lot of original tunes. And among them, there's these gun violence songs. And I'll tell you how it came about. Was one, there was an incident where a family member of mine was harmed by gun violence in recent years. And I won't go into that too much. Very, by the way, like, horribly traumatic.
I'd imagine. As you know.
And Vallejo, California, if you know the area up there by Oakland and Richmond, the gun violence, while me and my wife were living there for 10 years, the gun violence was just daily out-of-control street violence, where friends of ours, I had never seen anybody shot by a gun until I visited Oakland, California, or Vallejo, California.
Yeah.
And we lived there downtown. And to get into the gun violence topic is pretty much endless. But so I'm doing guitar shows at the same time. And in addition to that, I do film, video, and stage as well as your guest. Hello, Devon, is it?
Devon.
Call me. Mm-hmm. Devon. Yeah, call me Devon. I got stage plays. I got films. And I have a project. It's known as Gun Zero. Gun Zero is something I've been promoting for several years. It needs a few million dollars to pull it out. And it's all ready to go and stuff. So there's a group up there called Broken by Violence, okay? And they are an online service and personal where victims of gun violence can contact the Broken by Violence, by the way, brokenbyviolence.com. And they tell your story anonymously and attempt to find help for survivors of gun violence, which are numerous. And so I wrote a song for them.
That's excellent.
And it's called Broken by Violence. And then I wrote other songs concerning gun violence. I think I forget the names of them. I write a lot of original tunes. And in Vallejo, you know, they'll have concerts all the time. We were doing concerts and shows with the Odd Fellows. They go out on the waterfront. And so, like, another one I wanted to tell you about, a group up there, it's called Guitars Not Guns.
Oh, and I love that because I think I heard about that program because Michael Franti is very involved in the anti-gun gun violence movement and does a lot of work up in the Bay Area and Oakland and that area. Thank you so much, Julian, for calling and sharing that, because there's a lot of things. I think I asked that chicken and egg question, like, do we usually find a passion for something, you know, being involved with gun violence, things that we don't want to get involved in, but our life takes us down that path where we're exposed to it, and all of a sudden you feel like I have to express somehow the emotions that I'm experiencing, and then that community kind of draws you in, I would imagine, these different groups. Because you have a song that I was hoping to play some that goes in the other direction around climate change, about your mama.
Yeah.
The title is?
Mm-hmm. Do Right by Your Mama.
Do Right by Your Mama. I was hoping you'd play a little of that because a lot of people, again, if – I think there's a two-part goal of the show. One, how does music, you know, inspire and lift us up and make us feel like we have hope and community around a topic or a passion or a movement? Mm-hmm. And secondly, how do we find that? Because what I've been hearing a lot from listeners and from students is that they want to get involved. They know there is so much need in the world, and yet the need feels so overwhelming that they don't know where to start, and then they shut down. Because when you're overwhelmed with need, it's hard to know where to step in. And so I was thinking, well, if we find one thing, just choose one thing that calls to you and put your energy into it, it can start to feel more, life feels more meaningful instead of feeling stretched in 80 different ways. And so I thought, well, if you hear a song or something that speaks to you, that makes you feel actually a little joy, even in a hopeless situation, even if it's something like gun violence or about climate change, it's easier to join in and be part of the movement, because you have to have joy with your movement and your protest. There has to be some sort of pleasure, or it just, I think, tears the soul.
Yeah.
So I was hoping you'd play a little bit and talk about the inspiration for that song.
I would do that, but I'm hoping you'll let me just address what – was it Julian?
Yes.
Had to say for a second. And I'm so glad that he is writing around that subject because it ties into what you said, how people get overwhelmed.
Yes.
And when people get overwhelmed and they hear another story of gun violence, they remain shut down. Hmm. And music is a way that can, you know, becomes normalized. There's been a lot of writing of how these levels of violence and speech that is violent gets normalized. Hmm. Oh, they're just saying that, blah, 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 blah.
They're just blustering.
And even when people are shocked, they shut down. And music can remind you in a powerful way that that ain't all right.
Yeah.
And I found a quote just recently, getting ready for an event I'm doing Friday to kind of sum up what is the power of music. And it was by a Netsilik Eskimo named, and I probably botched the name, but something like Or Pingalik. And he said in a poem, "Songs are thoughts sung out with the breath when people are moved by great forces and ordinary speech no longer suffices." And that's what it is. And so it's coming from a different place than when you give a speech.
Mm-hmm.
And so it touches people's hearts before it touches their minds. And when the heart is awakened, I believe, then the mind can hear what the heart's saying.
Mm.
Otherwise, it may have barriers to what, you know, either because of political beliefs or fear, overwhelmed
fear. Mm-hmm.
Quality, all those things, mm-hmm. there's barriers. But when the heart speaks, I think it has, you know, a tendency to be able to push through that.
So, I do. I agree with that. And it is, I keep going back to, you know, what is it that we're drawn to when people say, I don't know where to go. I don't know what direction. I don't know where to start. It just feels too much. Say, listen for the sounds that call you.
Yes.
And then follow those sounds. All right.
So,
this song.
Anyway, this is a tune. It was part of a play that I did when I moved up here to the Central Coast. I had been away from theater for a while, and I met a wonderful actor and director and singer, David Hance, through doing a staged reading of one of my plays at Slow Repertory Theater. And we went on and launched a little touring company called Esplosivo Chamber Theater. And this was from a piece called The Botanical Engineer, which had an environmental theme.
Beautiful.
The fires are raging up and down the coast. Mother Nature, she's mad at us, gonna turn us into toast. He said, if you don't do right by your mama, your mama won't do right by you. Great blue glaciers, where they melt into the sea. Pretty soon there'll be fishes swimming where all your people used to be. 'Cause if you don't do right by your mama won't do right by you, by you. And people get ready, 'cause there ain't no trainer coming, gonna take us away from the mess we make. And people get ready, 'cause it's gonna get ugly, for can't learn to give back more than what we take. The pot it is boiling, and there ain't that much time. We sit around on our haunches, good people, it's gonna be such a capital crime. 'Cause if you don't do right by your mama, Your mama won't do right by you.
Now, mama. That's my guest, Devin Wallace, right here, playing my Do Right by Your Mama.
By Your Mama.
That's beautiful. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And Devin, you mentioned briefly that you've got a program coming up on Fridays.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be starting. What is this and where is it? If people want to hear you do your thing.
This grew out of, you know, the very reason that I reached out to you, and that's a need to bring people together.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also felt the same thing at people turning out for events, that the growth is amazing. The No Kings, which they say is 5 million people. But you also know that with social media now, it's easier to organize events, but if there's not the structure, they can fall apart easily.
Yes.
Or they can be led astray easily. Or if there's big pushback, violence can break out. So that's why I'm, you know, as I was approaching you, calling upon artists, calling upon musicians and people who love music to bring music into this so that we can do this kind of activism on what we care about in a way that hopefully doesn't create a great deal more division, but helps get people to see that we're seeing these as ethical issues more so than we're seeing them as political issues.
Mm-hmm. And human issues.
Yeah, human issues. So anyway, on Friday with some friends and my mate Barbara Karish, who has been in singing groups, particularly with the people who, you know, sang labor songs and Woody Guthrie songs and some of the newer music of this sort of type. She's brought some good tunes for it. Some good friends, Alice and Erica Reinheimer and Susan Quinones are going to be working with me on that. And we're going to be holding it at the White Heron Sangha, which is a Buddhist center, a Buddhist Sangha group. This is not a sponsored event of the White Heron Sangha, but we are going to be holding it there at the facility. And it's called Many Voices, One Heart.
And it's when? This
it
Friday?
Is Friday, June 27th.
Mm-hmm.
And the address is 6615 Bay Laurel Place. That's in Avila Village.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be a chance to sing some uplifting songs and build that kind of solidarity that, you know, history has shown that music can be brilliant at.
Yes.
You know, I lived through the civil rights period, and music was not only a driving force for organizing, but it was one of the things that kept more violence from breaking out. And I'd love to tell a story about that if there's time.
We can, after the break.
Okay.
All right. Very good. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Devin Wallace, singer, songwriter, activist, community leader. And we're talking about the power of music to bring movements together and hopefully bring more unity and less division. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I'm the masters of war. Here that build the big guns. Here that build the death planes. Here that build all the bombs. Here that hide behind walls. Here that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but built to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to
I'm Elizabeth believe. Barrett, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, here with my guest, Devin Wallace. We're music-centric today, and it feels good to hear the music, even when it's intense. The lyrics are intense, and the message is intense, and the need feels so great, but there's something still comforting in hearing the messages sent through voice. I loved the quote that you gave earlier, but you were talking about kind of the story that brought this idea of music and many voices, one heart to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I've been knowing, I've been feeling a need to return to some activism, which hasn't been a lot of that in my life for some time. And again, I wanted to come into it a different way, you know, from a little older, wiser way. Mm-hmm. And the civil rights movement was really informed by spirituality. And, you know, everybody knows of Martin Luther King and the way that he preached nonviolence. Less people know about Bayard Rustin, who, you know, is the one who actually went and studied with the Gandhi people to learn how to do that, and was doing organizing all around the country. But because of his sexual identity, he was pushed out of the public eye. But the spiritual aspect was prevalent, you know, through that movement. And it was one of the things that really made it so effective in terms of changing social policy, I do believe. And one of the key factors of that is that it had such power that it could actually stop violence from happening. And when I first moved to the Northwest and I landed in Santa Barbara for a little while until I quickly ran out of money and didn't really feel at home there. But right when I landed, there was some racist stuff going on, some racial animosity, let's say, happening in the schools. And I really felt that Santa Barbara was kind of going, well, you know, we're a progressive city. It's not a big problem. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, we need music here. And so I found this great singer with one of those deep Paul Robeson kind of voices that could carry the music of the African-American, you know, experience in that way. And we did a project in the high schools, traveling around, of music of the civil rights period. And a lot of those kids had not learned any or much of that, you know, particularly the white kids, but even, you know, some of the African-American kids hadn't heard all of the powerful stories. And as I was preparing for that and reading about the role of music and found, you know, instances where marchers would be – there was one classic example where they were marching across a bridge and people along the side had baseball bats and axe handles. But when the marchers were singing and they kept their groove, the no axe handles swung. Mm-hmm. But when they lost their groove and fear took over, violence broke out. And I thought that was such a perfect example of what happens. There's a force field that music has. And it also, even if you don't want it to touch your heart, it touches your heart. Mm-hmm. It's like when I was a teenager, I got uprooted from the Missouri because my father lost his job and we moved to Little Rock in a school that had been recently desegregated. And, you know, very few black students there, but the white students, you know, just very high racism. But they love James Brown. And you talk to them, how can you – you know, how can you say this is the best music you've ever heard that makes you feel so alive, that is so wonderful, but you somehow put a wall around James Brown mm-hmm. that does not extend to James Brown's people? Mm-hmm. And you saw how that can happen. But music has that capacity. There's a wonderful guy, Yuval Ron, an Israeli guy who does projects of bringing Palestinians and Israelis together. And when they see what they have in common and through music, things start to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what we need. We need to see something that is this common link we have in music, which most people love. You know, the surveys show there's not very many people who don't have at least some music that they love.
That moves them.
Yeah.
Well, and wouldn't it be interesting to, as you're doing, you know, Friday night with your Many Voices, One Heart, instead of saying let's, you know, not instead of, but in also with the protests of the gathering and the No Kings protest, to have sing-alongs. Like, I think yep. It'd be fabulous if we yes. just had sing-alongs where mm-hmm. the community came together and songs that, you know, because many songs are protest songs, like Row Jimmy Row, that you would never know that it was a protest song
right.
because the Grateful Dead plays and it's got to be a dead song.
Yeah.
So people are singing along at concerts. They have no idea. Or
right.
Born in the USA, Bruce Springsteen says that's a protest song.
Well, and the tradition, you know, I mean, African Americans, because during slavery, they in within spirituals, mm-hmm. they took songs that were coded messages on yes. how to get from here to there and everything.
Yeah.
So things can be there subliminal or, you know, coded or whatever. So,
and it
yeah.
feels less threatening. I think messages can be delivered that are poignant but less threatening when there's even a rub or a parody to it, which leads to your song you wrote recently, No, No King, mm-hmm. Which is a parody song with a strong message, but also it's a little more fun of a ditty
right
than a heavy.
Exactly, because humor is essential.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wanted to mention – one other aspect of why is music such a great you know, vehicle? And it's because, hey, neuroscientists tell us endorphins, mm-hmm. dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, mm-hmm. All of the feel good and feel bonded with other people, music releases that stuff.
Absolutely.
So even if you're singing, you know, even a real hard, dark song, at the same time, you have some great hormones that are helping you with that. And if you're singing a happy song, an uplifting song, you know, you get double.
Yeah.
You get double that. So that's what I wanted to bring to you know, this tune. And it was going to the No Kings event that just recently happened and seeing how many people were in comic costumes. You know, there were comic costumes, there were comic phrases on signs. And so I thought, well, we need some songs that, you know, pick up on that, and so that we can laugh at this. And so that's what goes behind this particular tune.
No King. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Devin Wallace, theater artist, playwright, songwriter, activist, returning to his activist roots with a program on Friday night called Many Voices, One Heart. And this is his song, No King.
And these kind of songs that can be effectively sung at rallies or whatever, you know, they need to be simple. They need to be catchy. And they need to be fun. If we wanted a king, we'd still be part of England. We'd throw out our coffee, for we'd all be drinking tea. There'd be no such thing as baseball. No, we'd all be playing cricket and majoring in British history. Now, if we'd wanted a king, there'd be wigs on all our judges. And Parliament is where we'd go just to watch our MPs fight. Take that, you bloody Tory! And we wouldn't buy no trucks, for we'd all be driving lorries and getting hammered at the pub most every night. But we don't want a king. We've been there and done that, and it didn't really please us way back when. So wake up, America, and see what's coming our way, and declare our independence once again. Oh, declare our independence
songs once again. Is that enough, or you want another verse?
Oh, no, I'm good. That's awesome. Although we could go on and on, but I don't want to run out of time. Devin Wallace.
Other verse just says that if we needed a king, we could use Prince Harry because he already lives here, and, you know, it'd be an easy little transition.
There we go. So, Devin, when you first reached out to me, what was the goal in your heart for coming on the show? What is it that you wanted to share with people, because you have a long history of, you know, starting when you were a teenager and anti-war movements and through the civil rights movement. I mean, you are kind of a piece of history now, being through many, many iterations.
Old enough to earn that one, for sure.
Yes, many iterations of change in the country. And I try to express to my students, you know, that, yes, it feels dire. They're experiencing so many, you know, troubles, challenges in their life, but every generation has had their stories. And I wonder what's missing today for them might be a sense of groundedness and connection to other generations. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it almost feels like there was a multi-generation experience through the civil rights movement. The war effort even had more of a multi-generational feel to it. But this feels a little lopsided, that there's a real disconnect between what young people are experiencing, the Gen Zs and the earlier millennials, and the seasoned activist vets like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So what are you hoping happens?
Well, that's an excellent question. And, you know, from what I've read, and I don't know, you know, how genuine it is, but there does seem to be indication of an overwhelmed quality of a lot of young people and what they're being handed, you know, by the previous generations, including my generation, that had such great hopes. You know, it's like that documentary, Joni Mitchell, she was saying, when we were writing these songs, we really thought we could change the world. And, you know, we saw, you know, we really didn't change it much. Now, I think she's wrong in that changes did get planted. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we need and I want to bring to the music I write. Is I mentioned when Bayard Rustin went and studied with Gandhi to kind of get it from the horse's mouth on how do you do nonviolence in a way that keeps it powerful, that keeps it going. Mm-hmm. And partly what was built into that was a sense of patience and a different sense of history. I read there was a peace organization in Sri Lanka. You know, they had all the long civil war happening there. And I can't remember the name of the organization, but a journalist asked, well, you know, for what's your 5-year plan for peace? And they said, 5 years? We have a 500-year plan for peace. And what they were hitting on was you do stuff because it's the right thing to do. Your heart tells you at least it's the right thing to do. We never know for sure if it's the right thing to do. But your heart, your mind, hopefully working together, tell you it's the right thing to do. You can't attach to quick results. You can't attach to a notion of how long this is going to take or what kind of gyrations it's going to go through. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to bring. And I want this movement that I do want to be a part of, because I do think we have some very dire threats that are unfolding at an incredible pace. Mm-hmm. And so we need to, I feel, the need to build a movement quickly, but wanted to have that spiritual underpinning. I'm not saying religious. I'm saying spiritual, because these are the values that we hold and we do believe that the majority of Americans hold in certain, you know, ethical categories. Not policy opinions will differ, but there are some basic human values that I think are, you know, at stake here. And so I want to be able to write music and, you know, possibly even have an equivalent of caroling that happens at events, you know, instead of singing, you know, Good King Wenceslas, you know, we'll be singing No Kings. Mm-hmm. Or we'll be singing songs that just celebrate people being together and, you know, and having like-minded sense about
community
their
sing-alongs.
Community sing-alongs.
Community sing-alongs.
There you go. There you go. So that's where I was at. You know, you mentioned that, you know, you might want to touch on to some of the earlier stuff like the suffragettes. Mm-hmm. And America does have this long history of that. I mean, all the way back to the Revolutionary War. The colonists took Yankee Doodle, which was a British tune, to make fun of the colonists. And they took the melody, rewrote the lyrics, and, you know, fed it right back to them. And it became like an anthem. You know, we touched on the African-American protests, the early ones where they used spirituals, later the civil rights movement. Hip-hop and rap has had that social commentary speaking to social justice in at least parts of it. The suffragettes, you know, movement starting in 1903, they also wrote their own lyrics to Yankee Doodle.
It's a really popular ditty.
Yeah, you could. And why is that good? Because it's already in the mind. It's already there. So you're just playing with it. And I was just reading. I haven't heard the music, but certainly the titles make you want to listen to some of the suffragette music. The title I loved was, "She's Good Enough to Be Your Baby's Mother, and She's Good Enough to Vote with You." So humor right there in the mix. Of course, the labor movement was very, very powerful. I did a project from the Endowment for the Humanities in Seattle, or actually Bothell, a little town north of Seattle.
I've been there.
Oh, you've been to Bothell. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. And they have this huge senior center up there. And so what I wanted to do was talk about the music of the Depression. Because music is one of the things that help people get through the Depression. Mm-hmm. Part of it would take their minds off the Depression, but part of it would directly, like Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Mm-hmm. Those kind of tunes directly address what people were experiencing. And at that event, people just, when we were playing some of the music, and there was a wide variety of music because the music industry was falling apart, then it had to open its doors to other forms of music. And suddenly they were recording what they called hillbilly music, which we now know as country music. At least an aspect of country music. They started recording more African-American singers. It opened up music through necessity, not through, wanting to change the world. They wanted to change the pocketbook, but it helped. But anyway, at this event, where we were singing different, you know, aspects of that labor, those labor songs, like Which Side Are You On? And mm-hmm. The Ballad of Joe Hill, a labor martyr. People would spontaneously get up and sing one of those songs. And I swear people would be crying in the audience because it still held that emotional charge for them. So that's why music is, you know, one of our best, vehicles to do all this. So that's where I'm at with it.
I'm so glad that you contacted me because you are a fountain of information and also talent. I loved your songs. And so people that might want to join in and have their voices be heard or maybe listen to voices and join in can join you this Friday night, June the 27th, at the Many Voices, One Heart. Is it a concert or a sing-along or a musical?
It's a sing-along. I mean, we're performing some stuff without people singing, some songs where people sing the chorus, some songs where people sing everything.
So come and participate as you like, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the White Heron Meditation Center at 6615 Bay Laurel Place. That's out in Avila Village. And if people want more information, can they find it on your website or?
No, unfortunately they can't, but okay. I could give an email if.
Yes,
if
an email if you have questions.
That. Yeah. Okay. And it's Devin, my first name.
Devin.
Walla, which is short for Wallace. So Walla. So DevinWalla@gmail.com.
And you might want to get together and have a sing-along with Devin because I think a lot of people are feeling the music inside of them. Thank you so much for coming in and spending this hour with me. And
quick note on the event.
Yes.
If people did come, be careful not to park at the restaurant in the front or it's a deli because that's a parking issue. So
there you go.
Park
this
a little
Friday
further
night.
On.
Looking forward to the music. This has All been right. a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. I will be gone for the next 5 weeks. We're going to have a special Call to Mind mental health awareness series with a lot of conversations of vital issues all around the country. I hope you'll enjoy. I'll be back with shows on August the 1st. Until then, thank you for tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We end with a beautiful rendition of a protest song sung at Harvard's graduation.
Well, I march through the storm, and I march through the rain, and I march through some sickness and some heartache and pain. And I laid on the ground, and I looked up at the sky, and I prayed to the Lord up above and asked why. But oh no, I'm not tired, I'm not through marching yet. And I'm a marching till I die, oh children, this you can bet. So we say, I'm gonna sing out, and I'm gonna march on. And everybody said,
I'm gonna sing out,
gonna march on. Put one foot in front of the other foot, yes I am.
I'm gonna sing out,
gonna march on.
I'm gonna march on.
I got to keep on keeping
I'm
on. Yes I have, gonna march on.
I'm gonna march on.
Oh well, my grandmama marched, and my granddaddy too. And I never thought it'd be something that I have to do. But I'll march if I must. I got a mission, you see. And I'll be damned if my children have to march for me. Now I believe in the power of raising my voice. And I believe in the power of making some noise. Now if I die, I can't sing. And if I can't sing, I'll die. So we should sing for one another. Now let's give it a try. So we say, I